Welcome to The Other Side of 40. My name is April Grant, and I'm here to help women make positive changes with their lives after the age of 40. Let The Other Side of 40 become your community to find inspiration and support to start the next chapter of your life. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Other Side of 40. We have today joining us my co-host and co-founder of The Other Side of 40, Renee Scott. And we also have our...
Hey!
I wanted to bring something a little timely into this conversation. We have a lot of things going on in the world right now. We are still locked down for COVID or partially. Some states are opening up in phase one. We have just yesterday a large-scale, full city-wide riot broke out in Minneapolis. And really, a lot of people have, based on the racial divide in the country, there has been a lot of discussions about gun ownership. And Black people in general do not own guns. And we have... I want to say we've kind of stepped away from it because our skin color has already been seen as a threat. So to add a gun just makes it seem excessive. That said, we do have Second Amendment rights. So I wanted to invite someone who is very affiliated with gun ownership in South Florida. So she is the director. Her name is Danielle Campbell, and she is the director of outreach and community development for Black Arms Gun Club, the South Florida chapter of the National African American Gun Association. So welcome, Danielle.
Thank you.
So I'm so even though we're going to talk about guns, we're going to start with my signature question. Tell us about your awakening moment. What was it and what happened?
And so for many, many years, I've worked in corporate America, and I've always had it in the back of my head and in the back of my mind that I needed to venture off full time into doing my own thing. But comfort and complacency kept me there. For that steady paycheck, in addition to, you know, owning and operating my own small business on the side. I got into a situation, because I'm a little mouthy, as you might see during this podcast, and I got into a back and forth with a supervisor of mine who was wrong, and she wanted me to go against my principles. And so, long story short, I wound up being terminated from my position where I had all 5-star performance evaluations for my entire tenure. And I found myself with a daughter in 12th grade, and we know how expensive that can be, unemployed. Yes. And so I spiraled into this, you know, battle with spirituality, you know, all of these questions. And what it really did was it made me look inward and really focus on what I needed to be focusing on. And so now I'm 3 years in, much, much happier than I was at the time, living on my own terms, not having to compromise my principles or anything like that. And so now it's just one day at a time.
Nice. So what are you doing for yourself? You said you're living on your own terms. So what does that entail for you?
So mostly I am now a 100% entrepreneur. I own my own business strategy company. So the same thing that I was doing with them, I've taken, you know, those trainings and those expertise, and I've opened up my own, you know, small business and business strategist. So that's what I do now. And I don't have to, I can say, okay, I'm not going to work with this client because this goes against what I believe or my core values. And so I'm not going to do this, rather than being in that corporate environment and you being given an account. And then this is what you have to do because this is what you've been told to do.
Yes. Peace of mind and client control is so important. So yes, helpful, ma'am. for yourself. All right. So let's get into this discussion. What made you buy a gun?
So I've always been fascinated. Like, my friends would laugh at me because everybody would have, you know, like Essence and Ebony, and I would have like Guns and Ammo magazines. So I always loved guns, right? The craftsmanship that goes into them. And I've ever since I've been old enough to own a gun, I've owned one, but I wasn't a responsible gun owner. It wasn't until one of my staff members was shot with stray bullet driving home from work, driving home from the store. She got hit with a stray bullet in her car that I realized that, you know, not only am I affected by this because she was such an amazing person, staff worker, staff person, friend, mother, but I'm also that irresponsible gun owner because I'm not training. I'm not, you know, familiar with my gun. I might go to the range maybe one or two times per year and shoot, and I'm littering the paper with holes, right? So I decided at that moment that I needed to change that in Alicia's memory. And I did a little bit of digging, and I found one of my Facebook friends had on this t-shirt. And I was like, hey, I need one of those. And he was like, well, you got to join the club before you can get one. And so that's how this relationship was born. I joined Black Arms Gun Club. You know, I had my two guns actually at the time, but I learned quickly that I knew nothing. And so I got with them and I started to train. I got a firearms instructor who I worked with once per week on Sundays. I worked with them for 2 hours every week until I got proficient in actual gun safety and in concealed carry and everything that I needed to know to make sure that I'm responsible when I'm out there with my gun. That's my backstory of how I actually became like this person that sits before you today with firearms.
That's really interesting. And so I want to ask, because at the top, April had talked about the idea of Black people kind of being concerned about having a gun on top of all the other things that we have to face. So what helped you overcome that and just say, you know, it is my right to own a gun and I want to learn more and I want to become proficient?
Well, one of the things was being around like-minded people, because like I said before, I always had a gun, but I would see, even I was guilty of seeing other Black people posting pictures of themselves at the range or with their guns. And I would be like, now what type of foolishness, you know, why are you doing that? And I didn't realize that we all have that responsibility to change that narrative, that negative perception surrounding Black people and firearm ownership. Because if you look on the other side, you'll see children hunting as young as five. They're at target practice as young as five. But our children can't play in a park with a toy gun without falling victim. And so looking at everything that was going on around me and just the environment and how crazy things were, I said, you know what, I gotta step outside of myself, because why should I be ashamed of the fact that I'm really willing and ready to protect myself at any cost? I'm not committing any crimes. I'm not, you know, causing any upheaval or requesting any uprisings against anybody. I'm just making sure that if somebody gets into my home, or if I'm out with my family at a movie theater or a church or a mall, or all the places where all of these crazy things are happening, that we have a fighting chance of getting out alive and making it home to tell our stories.
Well, that's interesting you say that about the kids, because I've always been fascinated with guns, not to the effect that the guns and ammo, but if I ever got a chance to go to a range, I would go shooting. That was one of my favorite classes when I went to camp when I was a kid, rifle shooting. I had a great eye. I, you know, could hit the target, and it was just, there was something powerful about it. And now that I have children, that has been my major hesitation about owning it, is not that I think they will automatically be irresponsible, but because it's so not commonplace to have a gun, I don't want them to be tempted to want to show it off because there's a gun in the house and an accidental shooting occurs. Not because they did anything particularly, but, you know, they show off to their friends because kids do things like that. But it's when you say the kids can't hang out in the park with a toy gun, I think of my husband. My husband's Bahamian. He grew up in the Bahamas. He had a machete at the age of five and knew how to use it, didn't cut anybody, didn't hurt nobody. You know, he went out into the field and had to cut, you know, sometimes cut paths because, you know, it's just an overgrown field. And they just really honestly just want to get from place point A to point B. So they would carry the machete so they could cut down the field so they could walk through it. So it just, we often infantilize our children to an extreme point where we don't even teach them just a safe way to handle dangerous situations.
And it's very true. So that's one of the arms of the Black Arms Gun Club. We do firearm safety workshops for children.
Okay.
And the truth of the matter is, our children are going to, they're naturally inquisitive, right? And yes. So we always know, we know what we have in our homes, but we don't know what's in our friends' homes. So I try to tell everybody, just like stop, drop, and roll, firearm safety should be a staple in our communities, because far too many children are dying because they're inquisitive. And we know our yes. children. So if we continue to do what we've been doing, we shy away from having a conversation as adults with one another. So you know we're keeping the children in the dark as it pertains to firearms. So this is what creates those, oh, let me show you something moments, where the children are wanting to show their friends because it's forbidden fruit. But if we opened up that conversation, not just amongst ourselves, but to include our children, then we would be doing them a service, because now they all know what it is. They know what it can do. They realize that it's not a toy. They know where it is. They know how to handle it. And so this would cut down severely on the number of deaths. I think that the national response to accidental shootings has been totally off key, because they're saying, put a lock through the gun. Now someone has entered into your home and you're fumbling with this little tiny key trying to get this lock open and yep. pull it out of the gun and then get a magazine, get around in the chamber. And now the person that got in that meant to do you harm, the harm is done. So right. the more appropriate response is education, right? We should be teaching our children what we have in our homes, because when you send your children over to your brother's house or your brother-in-law or your sister-in-law's house, you're not asking them, hey, do you have any guns in the home? Most people don't ask that. And so they don't know. So you don't know when your children are away from you or when they're out with their friends. We don't know what they're being exposed to. So as parents, just like we teach them to swim and we don't have a pool in the backyard, we need to make sure that we implement all safety mechanisms as it pertains to our children. And we want to make sure that we're feeding them the appropriate information so that they're not picking it up from friends or TV or family members.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And it sounds like that leads like naturally, like what does responsible gun ownership look like? Because that to me seems like that would be a part of responsible gun ownership, is having these conversations. So what all would you include if you were to kind of like make bullet points about what responsible gun ownership looks like?
So the first thing for me with gun ownership, the first thing that I would say is, you know, people get guns and it almost puts a battery in their back, or so you think, because once you undergo that training to conceal carry a firearm, you realize that you're bound by many more rules than you are when you don't have it. And so the first thing I would say is making sure that you don't present or pull out a firearm unless you need to. So that's one. The second thing is, if you do have to present it because you feel like you're in danger, keeping your finger off the trigger unless you're ready to shoot. Then you have a duty to know what's beyond your target, because even if you're in a self-defense situation and you shoot, you might hit your target, but if you let off a round and shoot somebody else, then you're responsible for that. So we have to, and then for me, the foremost thing would be training. You have to train. That training has to be consistent. It has to be targeted. And so once you get out there and you realize, hey, these are my shortcomings, you have a responsibility to make sure that you work on those things and hone in on those things, so that if you do need to present, which we all hope we never have to, you're doing so with accuracy and precision. That's our responsibility. And then I'm going to add something else that doesn't come from, you know, the gun safety rules, which would be to have these conversations, participate in these conversations and come into them with an open mind. Because I've even had people that are in the military say that Black people shouldn't be walking around with guns because it just adds another thing. But what we don't realize is that you can be being 100% good. You can be dressed appropriately. You can speak proper English. You can say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. Your outcome really depends on what type of person you encounter.
Yep.
Yeah. And so knowing that, we have a responsibility to protect ourselves.
And I'll just say, I'm gonna pat myself on the back, because I did a good job then. We were watching a movie. I don't remember what we were watching, but my youngest daughter, who's six, saw a woman with a gun and her finger was not on the trigger. And my daughter goes, well, her finger's not even on the trigger. And I said, well, she's not ready to shoot. And until she's ready to shoot, her finger does not belong on the trigger because she doesn't want to accidentally shoot someone that she's not intending on killing. And my daughter just kind of looked at me like, oh. And I, you know, I mean, I've, like I said, I've gone to gun ranges and stuff like that, but you know, that was just something that stuck out, that she noticed it at six, that someone's finger wasn't on the trigger. And her first instinct was, it needs to be on the trigger to be ready. And I'm like, no, it doesn't.
Our children are paying attention.
They
are. Our children are paying attention. And if we don't teach them the appropriate things, they're going to pick up the wrong thing. And then we all have a problem.
Yeah. So, what you said something else. I can't remember. Do you have a question, Renee? I had something in my head.
No, I just love, I love that this idea of is consistent training. So what are some of, do you offer like workshops, like frequently, do you kind of reach out to groups to kind of do trainings, or what is, what do you suggest are the best ways that people can learn, find resources to do training for gun safety?
So I realized that a gun club may not necessarily be the environment for everyone, but every gun range has, they have a range safety officer, and they have people in the range that put on classes that you can take. As a club, what we do is we bring down people. We work with local firearms trainers, of course. We have a resident firearms trainer, Mr. Scurry, who makes sure that everybody that enters into the club has a shooting proficiency. We practice what we have. We, as a club, we've developed a shooting standard. So we get everybody on range with Mr. Scurry, and he runs through the shooting standard with them just to assess where they are, where they might need help. We bring in, like we've brought in Green Beret from Maryland to come in and train us. We've done rifle training. We did, just the most recent training we did before COVID-19 hit us was with a company called Triad Medical, where we practiced if somebody gets shot, how to pack the wound. There are a few of us in the club that are certified in BCON. We're all, just about everybody's CPR certified. And so we learn these things because we realize that we have to be prepared for also what happens after the bang. If somebody is to get shot in your presence, even if you're not the shooter, one of the things that peeves me to heaven is that we've turned into a culture that we don't jump in to help. We just pull out our phones and we just start recording anytime anything happens. And most of the lives that are lost in African-American communities from gunshot wounds are not, are because of, they bled out. And it's really because the people around them don't know what to do. And so that's another thing that we're developing as a club is we just got one of the nurses that's in the club certified in BCON to be an instructor. And we're going to be deploying street teams out into the community to teach people how to pack wounds, how to apply pressure, how to put on a tourniquet appropriately, when it's appropriate to put on a tourniquet, and things like that nature. So we're always training. We get together once per month and we're always training. We always invite people in to train, and then the firearms instructors, I think we have about seven now firearms instructors that are members of the club. So they put on training, they put together training, and we go to outdoor and indoor ranges and we run through those drills as well. And we try to make it a point to always train. And then one of the staples in the club is sometimes, you know, financial woes hit people and you may not have the money to train, because this is a thing that can get expensive.
Yes.
You can dry fire at home. There are dry fire videos on YouTube that you can access to help, and it helps you. The more dry firing you do, the better your muscle memory is. So that if you do have to pull out your gun, you just automatically bring it up to eye level off that muscle memory.
Wow. Okay. So I do have a follow-up question to that. I think you said the word BCON training. Is it BCON or VCON? BCON, when you're talking
bleed control.
Bleed con training. So bleed control. Okay, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. What is it? What does that actually mean? Bleed control training. And you're right, that is important, because I mean, just like most injuries, people don't die typically from the immediate injury. It's how they're treated after, how fast they can get to a hospital, how fast someone, you know, turns them on to their side if they're, you know, it's a swimming accident and they choke on water, how fast they get them out and turn them over, not just particularly from them, you know, taking, ingesting water. How often do you think, especially for a beginner, if you're just starting out, how often should you expect to train? And is there a gun type you should use?
So one of the things, one of the beautiful things about being in a glove club, when I first joined the club, I was a Smith & Wesson girl. I just knew that I had the right guns and I like these Smith & Wessons. It wasn't until I got with the guys and started, like, I'm just going around like shooting everyone's gun. I realized that my guns didn't necessarily fit my hands appropriately. I had a 45 and a 380 Smith & Wesson. And I eventually got rid of them. I got rid of those guns and I went with Heckler & Koch. So now I'm an H&K girl because those guns just fit my hand better. So I would tell people to go to a gun range and they'll let you hold the guns in your hand. They have guns that you can rent. Rent guns just so that you see what gun fits best in your hand. And then once you purchase a gun, once you feel have one that fits, they have where you can adjust the back straps, you can adjust the handle to fit better in the palms of in your hand. So I would tell people to don't just run in the store and be like, oh, I'm going to buy this gun because this gun is on sale and now I have to have a gun. Try to figure out which gun fits you, fits your style of dress. As women, you know, we have to conceal. So I have multiple holsters. I have one for the thigh. I have one for the belly. I have an inner waistband. I have an outer waistband holster because where I'm going to holster my gun is going to depend on how I'm dressed.
Right.
And then you got to get proficient with drawing from those spaces. So the hardest one for me is the thigh. But sometimes, you know, you want to look cute and you want to put on a little cute dress. And right, so you need that thigh holster. But that's the most difficult draw for me.
Okay.
That's my most difficult draw.
So if I have trouble doing the thigh, I'll know I'm not alone.
Yes, it's a time because it's like, okay, if they're big enough. And now you got to try to do the proper stance. You don't want to show too much. You got to lift and pull.
Oh,
and
yeah. So yeah, you don't want to flash the world.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to show too much.
Wow. This has been really, really, I'm loving these. Some things I think that are really great, just that I hope that as people are listening or really thinking about, that it seems that just as a reminder that gun ownership seems to offer a lot of wraparound services if you're doing it correctly. It seems to be just like there's a lot of education, there's a lot of training, but safety is priority. And just the idea as something, as April just mentioned, that you had said about the whole idea we didn't think about, hey, we have to think about what happens if you have to use this force or if somebody is hurt and how do we help them. And so one of the key takeaways that I'm even thinking about is just gun ownership is so, it offers its own wraparound services and it's really holistic in the sense that it's not just about having a gun, it's about only using it if you absolutely need to. It's about training people on how to use it. It's about keeping everyone safe. And I really just like that. If we broaden people's minds about that, that may change the way that people approach the idea of guns.
And yes, I just,
those of us that are deeply immersed, I'm sorry, those of us that are deeply immersed, we call it the gun community. And because that's how it is. And then once you get like involved, the one place that I'll say, and some ranges are a little bit thicker than others, but you get into a range and it's like a family. Everybody in there is, people are getting along across gender, across race, across class, and everybody is, you know, there for a purpose. And if they see a deficiency, somebody might step in and say, hey, you know, this might be a better way to do this. So it's one of the most neutral places you can ever be.
And so I think I keep doing this compound question thing. I'm trying to get better at it. I also asked about training. So if there's a newbie who comes in, how often should they expect to get trained? You said you went in every Sunday for 2 hours. Is that typical? And how long did you do that for?
I went in every Sunday for 2 hours. The club recommends that you do it 3 times. So they only ask that you do it for three sessions. But I just had this thing about getting proficient. So I did it for like 2.5 months until I felt completely comfortable manipulating my firearm, you know, with precision. And then as a club, we meet once per month. So there are some of us that meet like inside the month, like we'll get together in a group and go out and shoot. We do, we're putting together, we used to have it. We used to have a female vice president, but she had resigned. And so now we're working to put together ladies' night again, because every week there's a range in South Florida. There every day just about that has a ladies' day where ladies can go in and shoot for free.
So that's also good
information to have. I'll compile a list. Yeah. I'll compile a list and I'll email it to you so that you have it so that you can share it with your viewers.
Yes, I would I would love that.
South Florida Rangers that have ladies' night.
I mean, because yes, you're right. It does get costly. Together. It can get very costly on top of the gun itself, you know, coming, you know, the ammunition. It's really kind of all in the ammunition, because once you buy the gun, then, you know, you can get deals to actually go in, but that ammunition, depending on what you're firing, can be expensive.
When I first started out, I would go through 200 rounds, 100 rounds at a range session, easy. And it wasn't until one of the guys in the gun club with me, Carlton told me, you know, and he has a podcast too, educational, The Gun Show Lounge. He told me that you need to go into the range with a plan. And it made perfect sense. So now when I go into the range, I'm usually shooting 25 to 50 rounds, one box. That's it.
Okay.
Because I'm going in with a plan. This is what I'm working on. I'm working on double taps, and I'm working on dropping my magazine and reloading. So I'm going to do that for a few minutes and then I'm going to get out of here. I used to be in there for hours. Now I can go in for 30 minutes and I can feel accomplished. I don't have to stay there, like planted in there for hours. It's just me going in to, you know, get some practice, run a few drills and get out. And the better you get, the less and the more targeted you get going in with a plan, the less money you'll start to spend.
Oh, that's also good to know. So I think I don't have any more questions today. Do you have anything else that we didn't touch on that you'd like to add to the discussion, to what's going on, to general education or knowledge for the listener?
So the one thing that I want to say is to the women. And by no stretch of the imagination am I a feminist, but I do feel like we have a responsibility to one another to tell one another when we're slipping. And we have a duty. We cannot, and history has shown us that we cannot sit back and wait for others to protect us. You know, I had one sister told me, oh, you know, my husband, and I told her, I said, but what about the times when you and your husband are not together? If you don't feel comfortable manipulating a firearm, a lot of the police stations have self-defense training. Me and a couple of other ladies from the gun club, we went and we did some self-defense classes with the police station under RAD, RAD. Amazing classes. They teach you how to break away if somebody's holding you from behind or if they have you by the wrist. You know how to get out of those holes. If you don't feel comfortable with that gun, get yourself some mace. Get a flip out knife, get something. But we have a responsibility to protect ourselves. We are our own first responder. The average police response time is anywhere from 6 to 18 minutes. It only takes a couple of seconds for something terrible to happen to you that you have a hard time recovering from or won't recover from at all. And so I challenge all of the ladies to please start taking a more targeted look at self-defense and what that means for you, and paying attention to your surroundings. Because I see women walking. That's like, I know you see, I'm sitting here and I'm looking around because I'm in between client appointments and I'm sitting in my car, but I'm always paying attention to what's going on around me. And that's very important. I see women walking and they're glued to their phones and not necessarily paying attention to not only what's happening, but who is the same person still walking behind you, you know, just really taking a different look at our own self-defense and what that means for us individually. And that's all that I have.
Well, I mean, I have to really add to that. I'm very cognizant of my surroundings, not even just while walking, while driving. I've had, back in high school, I had this really strange incident where someone It's not good. I used to have to change for sports. And so I was changing in my car. And for some reason, someone had passed by thinking that I guess I was trying to show them something. You didn't see anything. Like I was an expert at making sure everything was covered, but I guess he thought it was an invitation. So he followed me off the freeway. But I noticed him following me off the freeway. And so I had to drive in circles, and then I drove myself to the police station. And then that's when he passed by, and I knew he was following me because I was going back and forth. I wasn't going in a straight line. And next thing you know, when I got to the police station, cause I knew where it was, he just kept going. But I think it's very important to pay attention to your surroundings in person. And in the car, I don't know. Like, I guess that's one of the pet peeves of mine in movies. Yeah. I'm like, how do you not notice that same car behind you for, 5 miles? Like, it's right behind you, or two cars behind you. It's the same car. And I tell my kids that all the time, that they need to keep their heads on a swivel, pay attention to who's around, what they're doing. And it's not a judgment at the outset. It's just noticing, because then you'll notice what they're doing. You'll notice that one person's waiting for a certain person to come out versus they're waiting to attack someone, and you'll see it. Thankfully, I've never personally been in a situation that I've had to physically encounter anyone, but I really attribute most of that to being really attentive to my surroundings. And if I even have the inkling that something's going on, I change my action and try to lead myself to a more crowded, surrounded area, so I won't be left alone with that person. But yeah, I think we do need to pay a lot more attention to the people around us.
And I'll also leave you guys with this. I had a police officer in one of the pedestrian safety training courses say that gave me some information about witness accounts of when something is happening. And he suggested that you always look at the person's shoes, because while they might be wearing two shirts and they might be able to change their shirt or pull off a shirt or throw on a jacket or put on a hat, they can't change their shoes that fast. And so he said that you should always look at the type of shoes that a fleeing person is wearing.
That's good to know. Good information. All right. Where can we, do you have any other questions, Renee?
No, I'm just loving that the theme is safety, and it's about keeping yourself safe. It's about, like, gun ownership is about being safe. And we have a responsibility to keep everything in our arsenal to keep ourselves safe. And one of those could very well and possibly should be a gun.
Yes.
The quickest, most efficient way.
Yes. So Danielle, tell us where we can find you. Tell us a little bit about your gun club. I know you should be out of Miami, correct?
Yes. We meet actually in Broward County in Pembroke Pines area.
Oh, nice. Okay, that's a little closer to me.
We are the club for the entire South Florida. Yeah, people in West Palm Beach and all the way down to Homestead meet with us because we're the South Florida chapter. They're in the process of trying to find people to put together for a West Palm Beach chapter. And so we meet in the middle, which is Pembroke Pines. We are the Black Arms Gun Club. The club is affiliated with NAGA. NAGA is about, I would say, about 6 years old. And so the club is about 3 years old. We currently have about 43 members, active members, and we are a group of people from all walks of life. We have nurses, we have people, teachers, people that work on the school board, we have entrepreneurs, people in financial services, and so it's just a litany of professional adults. We come together, we meet for about an hour in a classroom setting where we discuss current events or gun laws or new laws that are coming down the pike and how they affect us. National issues. We discuss new initiatives that the club might want to embark upon. And then we go downstairs for some range time and we shoot. And so what I'll do is I'll send you guys also a link to the club's pre-application, just in case any of the members, or the listeners are here in South Florida and they're interested in joining. Tonight at 6 o'clock, we're actually having a informational session. I'll also post a link to that. Because we've been getting like an influx of applications with all of the craziness that's going on in the world around us. And so we're going to be doing three informational sessions. One is tonight at 6, One is on the 30th at 7. I'm sorry, on the 31st at 7. And the next one is going to be on the 2nd at 7 p.m. And so that link that I'm going to send you is going to work for all three meetings. So okay. I'll send that out to you. And I'll also send you guys a link for the pre-application for people that might be interested in membership. And again, the membership dues are low. They're only $10 per month. They can be paid monthly. They can be paid quarterly, semi-annually, or annually. It's totally up to the member. And so we'll dive into all of that stuff on the informational session, but I'll send you guys those links so that people will have more information. We're also comprised of men and women. It's a mixed group.
Right. For tonight, is that an in-person? I mean, I know we're in COVID, but we're also in phase one, or is that Zoom or online?
It's going to be via Facebook Room. It's just like Zoom. So it's going to be via a Facebook Room. So it's just a link that you click on and join it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll probably post that today because this episode, I think I'm going to post actually this upcoming week. So, but I'll post the links that you send today so people can have access to it. I have a Facebook group, The Other Side of 40 official Facebook group, where I'm working on the community aspect of getting it together. And that's actually where someone suggested this topic specifically to get.
I need to get into that group. This sounds like a great movement.
Yes. I mean, it's just about positive change for women who, you know, making a change when you're 40 is a lot different than making a change when you're younger. So having a supportive community to help you make those changes and you don't feel so alone is the place. So that's what the purpose is. And thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you guys for having me. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Other Side of 40. You can find us at our site, theothersideof40.com, and on Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Other Side 40.